traditional symbol for St. Matthew is three money bags. The notion is that actually Matthew gave away the money bags and was focusing more on following Christ as well. Our focus this week, as we look on St. Matthew's Day and reflect on the past year and where we believe God is calling us, I want to focus on that first passage from Ephesians, and in particular just one verse of it. So I'm not going to do a full sermon. It's going to be a sort of a 3 or 4 minute introduction, and then we've got various different themes that I want to invite others up to contribute to. But we can see in this list of these gifts that Christ gave to the church, the context, a little bit of a cryptic background. It alludes to someone who's gone down into the depths, into the dark place, and then has emerged triumphant, victorious, and like a victorious general who's won a victory, distributes gifts out to his people. So we have Christ now distributing gifts to the church, and he says each one of us has received it. And the purpose behind the main five that are named, the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors and teachers, who are probably both combined as one, their role is to equip God's people to do his work and to build up the church, the body of Christ. My role is to be a gardener, if you like, one that I sort of relate to increasingly these days, but to plant, to prune, to cultivate, to do a bit of weeding, to keep things healthy in our environment as a church. But it's the work of the garden, it's the work of the church that really is the main focus. It has never been God's intention that one or two people, one or two leaders do everything and be expected to have all the gifts needed to be able to do all those things. Because clergy will be the first to tell you, we're not equipped, nor are we gifted to do everything. But what we can do is encourage, support, to cultivate, and to bring a healthy environment so everyone's gifts can flourish, can grow, and to bear fruit. And that's where I want to focus this morning. The word to equip, by the way, I won't give you the Greek word in the background, but the word means a range of things: to mend and to repair, to complete and to furnish something, as well as equipping and preparing. That's conveyed behind what the leadership role, if you like, of the church, the pastors and the teachers, is to mend and repair, to complete, to furnish, equip and to prepare. I found that really spoke to me as to something of that range of what it means to try and equip us as a church community, such as we are, with all our fragility at times, our cracks, our chips on the edge and all those bits and pieces. That's part of gospel ministry. One of the things or areas of art that I have a particular interest in, and there's quite a wide-ranging area of interest that I do have, is imagery of the tree of life. And that's quite a genre in its own light. If you do a search, you can see right across a whole range of cultures and traditions, from Persian to others, have a whole range of imagery behind the tree of life, which in our biblical narrative is front and center in the Garden of Eden. And that image becomes a very strong one to convey what God is doing throughout the world. So the image that we have for St. Matthew's is of a tree of life, referring to a verse in Ephesians 2 of how our roots need to go deep into the love of Christ so that the fruitfulness of the tree can then provide the health of the tree itself. One of the variations of the tree of life and the imagery, the artwork, is the different types of fruit that emerges and the range of birds and animals and others who find shelter within the tree. When I was looking last night for an image to use this morning, this is the one that jumped out at me. What I like about it is not so much the image of the tree itself, although I rather do like it. It's painted on a wall. And I love that. It's in that manifest reality. Bricks aren't the most exciting building object to use. You know, they're useful, they're pragmatic. Very rarely do you find anything of enormous beauty emerging out of bricks. They have to be featured in some particular way. But I love the fact that this tree of life is on the backdrop of the bricks and mortar reality of life. And it can beautify it. It can bring life to it. And I've since discovered there's a whole subgenre of tree of life murals in amazing locations around cities and inner cities, and even some on big silos out in rural locations, bringing glimpses of beauty behind the most functional of elements. So that's the image I'm going with this morning. As I said last week, or the last couple of weeks, in talking about how we're approaching St. Matthew's Day this year, we're not seeking the next big thing. There are movements that come and go. Some of them are of God and produce much fruitfulness and excitement and energy, but by their nature, they are exceptions. What we often overlook is the reality of the day by day. I love the song that we had every morning, every evening. We need to sing. We need to breathe in that space. So we're not focusing on the next big thing and how we can seek to try and enlist God to bring it here. That's in God's hands. But to be mission-minded as a church, to focus that our whole identity is drawn into being drawn into the mission of God, the God who has sent himself into the world, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, sends us in that same space. We're sent into the world to be about the mission of God. That's why we exist. And I would suggest this definition of what that could look like. Now, I'm not original in this definition. I heard a few weeks ago where Robin Genders and I went over to a Uniting Church workshop, a seminar, and heard a speaker called Karina Kraminsky, Uniting Church minister in Sydney, who's written a very interesting book called Urban Spirituality. And I think she quoted someone else who used this phrase that captured my imagination. You know, sometimes you hear a talk and a lot of the things are good, but one phrase stays with you. And this is the phrase that stayed with me. Being mission-minded is cultivating space where kingdom things happen. I rather like that idea. Cultivating the space where kingdom things happen. The space could be physical space. It can be a site, a church site. But it can be as much a cultural or social space, or space in our diary, or space in our calendars of different types of things we do. But creating that space so the kingdom things can happen. So that's what I'm running with a little bit today. Now, one of the things you would have noticed about the tree of life is it's made up of many different leaves. And a leaf by itself may not seem particularly impressive. If you are short on leaves, the rectory can provide you with significant amount of gum leaves and other types of trees. And coming over, the school was very generous next door. They send us all their London plane tree leaves and the other ones that I'm allergic to. So leaves are part of our world, especially in this part of the world as well. But I'm talking about the leaves that are actually on the tree still, showing life and doing their work as a leaf. Now, I asked Linda in the office to just give me a bit of a list of all the things that happen throughout the week outside our church services. So we have the two main weekly services, the Sunday service and the Wednesday service. But outside that, we're not just shut up and nothing else is happening. These are some of the things, a few of them we're going to hear about in a bit more detail in a few minutes. But it's the men's prayer breakfast. An email comes out quite consistently, Sunday afternoon, invitation to a very gender-specific grouping of men to welcome to come to the men's prayer breakfast. We'll hear more about that in a minute. Once a month, our Wednesday congregation, a good number of them go out to the Marriottville Hotel, who tell us now they're one of the great groups that they look forward to having for a monthly lunch together. Every Thursday morning, there's a community workshop who receive all the bubbles of ideas and other thoughts that I might come up with and sometimes just look at me and nod and mean no. occasionally they pick up some of the ideas, but even better ideas as well. If you want to know about the duck, toy duck project that can be built, Don Walker is your man to hear about it. If you want to hear about restoring some of our garden benches and things that just appear restored and beautified, and that's very much the work of our community workshop. And that is not that is gender inclusive, by the way. It's not the men's shed. It's open to all, male and female. Twice monthly, we have a gardening group who work around in our sanctuary garden and other areas. It's been a wonderful job in recent weeks as spring is upon us and doing their work. We have small groups, one of which is the brass cleaners. And they aren't just brass cleaners, they are a group. They're a small group who gather together to do that sort of job. And they come up with interesting redecorations. They spring on me when I come into church and think, oh, hadn't seen that before. And it looks great. There are St Matthew's Homes, so there's a table tennis club that's just started and emerging. I can hear the yells of excitement or despair from the rectory next door as that table tennis club makes use of the hall. There's the Tuesday morning Bible study group. There are the One Accord Singers Collective, who we'll be hearing from a bit later after, just before communion and during communion as well. The last year we had the Hope 25 concert, where when Imagine Jesus meets the Beatles and the rehearsals for that and the concert itself. There's the Wycliffe Prayer Meeting. There's the Sew and Chat Group. The book group we're going to hear a bit more about in a few moments. There's the Thursday morning prayer group. Just as we gather to open up, and I have to give you a secret, because there's an order of prayer for every morning of the year in our prayer book, and there's one that's set aside for Thursday morning. The only problem is that we only meet on Thursday morning. We have the same service. So we cheat. We sit down and say, what day is it today? And we can get away with saying, it's Tuesday. Okay, let's go to Tuesday morning. But that's actually a significant part of our upholding our church and for needs in prayer. We have the monthly prayer gathering at Fiona and Paul gather together and have a time of retreat as a church. It's a very reflective time of prayer. There's the film afternoon that has a range of films that I get to hear about. We have a number of uses where Marrickville High School make use of it. There's both the art students who are granted permission to use our church to film part of their assessment piece. Dying to be a fly on the wall to see what they were doing, but no, they had closed doors and came in and did their piece. We have a number of senior high school students who we've given permission to use the basketball ring in the car park at lunchtime. They are well supervised by our dog, Abby, who barks her head off telling them to whatever they're doing. We know when they're there. There are some students who use our benches, and we've had liaison with the school. They check with us, is that all right? And we said, look, they've been fine. They just come and have a quiet space when they just need to have some chill-out time. The senior students over in Eden Park, and others who use it during school pick-up time. And a number of parents who use our car park. Local walkers walk through our sanctuary garden. It's almost, there hasn't been a time when I haven't been doing something in the garden and someone hasn't walked past and just said, loving it. And one lady who said she comes through, there was one guy who comes through every evening, he said, and I touch the lamb's ear. Just loves the feel. Every evening comes through. Those moments are just lovely. There are families who'd slip in and just have a few quiet moments to connect up in the memorial garden or in the sanctuary garden to remember the names and the connection, the point of connection through our laying of ashes. The playground is used by a couple of families, local families, a couple of times a week. They will look a bit uncertain when we walk past and I just welcome and said, lovely to see you. You're always welcome to come and use the playground as well. A couple are known to come and use the hopscotch area, especially now that it's been revived. Then there are other groups who use our facilities. One of the goals we set ourselves a couple of years back was to invite other community groups to use our facilities so they're put to good use, not for the purpose of raising funds, not as a sort of an income generator, but to cover our costs. So we have hire by agreement. A group called Mums and Bubs. They have two new groups who start Thursday morning and a Thursday afternoon group every 5 weeks. They fill the room and some of the space around as they get support in those early weeks of becoming young mothers. Probus meets monthly. We have an exercise class that I'm excluded from on Monday mornings because they do their business on emerged for coffee, I'm told, afterwards. It's the exercise class. There's a neighbourhood sewing group who just said, we need somewhere to do some sewing. Can we use the corner of the church? And Linda was able to organise that. The Agape Music Collective did a concert here in the last 12 months as well. That's a very high-level, professional-level classical music group. And then the diocese approaches St Matthew's as being one of their venues of choice. So the Creation Care Network met here recently to hear more about our sanctuary garden, the vision behind it, and came away very enthused behind what it conveyed by way of our sense of identity as a church. Our area deanery has clergy gatherings. The Diocesan Clergy Forum, it's three times a year. Very often one of those is at St Matthew's. The Archbishop's has the lay leaders meeting last Wednesday evening. The Archbishop's certificate class on handling the Bible was held here. The retired clergy will be here for their annual morning tea, which is should be a capital M, capital T. That's a significant event for them this coming Thursday, as they will be using our hall, and hopefully the weather's good for from the Perrins Centre as well as the courtyard. And, hot off the press, when it comes to the December election synod, as we meet as a synod to discern and hopefully elect our next archbishop, the communion service prior to that will be held here at St Matthew's on the Friday night prior to the synod. So the space that we create for doing where kingdom things can happen is a reality, and it's great to see it used in a whole range of ways and connecting up with the wider community. So what is this cultivating space where kingdom things happen? And there's a few snapshots I'm going to invite now. One of them are our regular rhythms and routines that just provide a framework from one day to the next. Fiona and I have a rhythm and a routine of starting the day with tea and toast with marmalade. Abby's trying to gate crash that particular gathering at the moment. She thinks she should be there as well. She was a naughty girl this morning. But rhythms and routines just help us navigate the day-to-day realities of life. The Thursday morning prayer gathering is one of those rhythms and routines. And I'm going to invite Charles just to come up and speak about one of those, which is the men's breakfast, which has a prayer breakfast, which has a significant history.
Yes, this is a bit of ancient history. You can see there, maybe, the notes from Dudley Tan for the first meeting of the men's prayer breakfast at his place, where he invited a number of men to come, and he provided a cooked breakfast, which was lovely, a great attraction. And we would chat and then pray, and we would always finish in time so people could go to work. Not that many of the current members still go to work, but that's another question. When he left, we started meeting here at St Matthew's in the hall over here, now the Perrins Centre, or in the hall at St Matthew's Homes. We downgraded to a continental breakfast. And you'll see there that, and you can see there, there's a picture of Dudley and a few others, and maybe you can't see it because it's probably pretty small, but some faces may be familiar. During COVID, we met in Tusmore Park, so we didn't stop just because the government told us to stop. We continued. I don't think we met every week, but we did meet and share time together. Currently, we meet in the Perrins Centre, 7:30 on Tuesday morning. We have a continental breakfast. We contribute $10, which more than covers the cost of the provisions. And the balance goes to various activities. We currently support the Woods in Coober-Pedy and also Barnabas Aid. We normally, after 30 to 40 minutes of eating and chatting, we normally consider a meditation, which comes at the moment from this book, One Year Devotions for Men. And then we pray for various things that are on our minds or issues for our church. We always welcome anyone who'd like to join us. And I would have to say, for my own part, I find it a great time of fellowship and support.
Thank you, Charles. So it's something that's been going for many, many years now and is regular prayer. Prayer notes are made and reporting back on some of the answers to prayer and other aspects as well. Another area where cultivating space, where kingdom things happen, comes in the area of remembering. One of the things I do say to some of the families when we lay ashes and things is that that's a really important side of our church life, that names and the stories associated with those names are important to us. One part of that is being familiar with our history, especially the longer history. And I'm going to ask Bruce if he would come forward just to speak briefly about some of the writing up of our history in ways in which we can rediscover and relearn as well. So, Bruce, I'm going to ask you a question. What are some of the recent projects that you've been working on by way of some of the our remembering and the writing of history? Go well, Valerie.
That's fine. I have a bad habit of walking through the cemetery area and looking at the headstones. And I wonder how often you do that. Years ago, when I first joined a church, I was fascinated with the headstones out there, and I wondered who on earth the people were that were mentioned there. What did they do? Why are they buried there? What did they contribute to the church? And being a scientist and a family historian, I got very into finding out things. And over the years, I've probably done some research on about 40 of the 50 headstones that are still existing. You might be aware that the cemetery was only open for 15 years. In that time, nearly 600 people were buried here. I have no idea where they were buried. Some of them, you're probably sitting on top of some of them. Some of them might be under the Kensington Road because the council in the 1950s took some of our land to widen the road. Some might be under the car park. I don't know. There are no plans. But I'm working on trying to research all of the 50 headstones that we do still have and the ministers that we've had for the first 100 years, which is about six, and also some miscellaneous things. I've got about 12 books at the moment that I'm going to leave in the Perrin Centre for people to borrow. But I've got three streams that I work on. One of them is the rectors of the church. The second one is people buried in the churchyard. And the third one I'm calling miscellaneous. Anything that attracts me goes into that. One I've got, quite a bulky volume, are marriage notices from the newspapers, South Australian newspapers, from 1849 to 1954. I had to stop at 1954 because Trove stops there. But all the notices I can find relating to St Matthew's are in there. So if you want to check up on your parents or your grandparents that were married here, that's the place to look. One entry fascinates me, which I will just read to you. The heading is Granger Aldridge. On the 1st of October at St Matthew's, Kensington, by the Reverend Mr. Jenkins, John Harry Granger of Adelaide to Rosa Annie, youngest daughter of the late George Aldridge, of Adelaide, South Australia. And that was in the Express and Telegraph dated Saturday the 2nd of October, 1880. Why do I pick that one out? What do we know about the Grangers? The parents, after their marriage, moved to Victoria and they had a son called Percy Granger, who you might know is a pianist and musician and composer. He married a Swiss artist and moved to America. He died in America. His wife said, "I think we'll have your funeral where your parents were born, were married." And she transported his body to St. Matthew's. And his funeral was held here, and I'm told that the place was absolutely swarming with musicians. And then he was buried in West Terrace. So we don't have his remains here, but we do have the memory of a massive funeral being held here. So there's names in there that you might want to follow. There's other things as well. If you have any particular interest in people that you want to know about, let me know and I'll get stuck into it for you.
Thank you, Bruce. I should also mention that Bruce works in the Diocesan Archive Office on Thursday, so he has access to a lot of those archival things. But remembering is always an important part of recognising who we are today. Another area of how we can seek to create that space is in the area of connecting and gathering. And there are two what I would regard as sort of seeds that have been sown beginning to show to take some root and become into little seedlings at this stage. The first of those, I'm going to ask Dave to come up and speak about Create a Church. How that's also under this part of cultivating a space and looking to see how God will be doing things in that space.
Thanks, Tim. Probably the easiest way, if you want to come and find out what Creator Church is all about, is to come and join us. We meet first Sunday of every month over in the St. Mary's Room at 9:45 through to 10:30. So that's the quickest way. But just to give a very brief summary of what it is that we are working on doing. One thing is just as much as we love church and the format and the way that we do church each week, and when I say we, I mean Western Christians generally, you'll find most churches you go to have roughly the same shape and do similar things. It can be a format that is not always the easiest thing for someone who's not familiar with church. We're like fish in water. It's familiar to us. We walk in, we feel comfortable, we sit down. That's not the story for everyone. We also recognise that there are different ways that people grow, learn and relate to each other, and we want to try to cater for some of that difference as well. So we do very similar things in that we gather around God's word and we sing and we explore what that means for our lives, but we do it in a different way. And I guess I heard something during the week that just really resonated in terms of the approach that we have, which was just three words to talk about: belonging, believing, and becoming. And the idea is, first of all, that we belong, that people can come as they are and immediately find a community and an environment where they can feel comfortable and feel as though they belong to the group that is meeting there, even on the first time that they attend. We want to believe. We want to see people grow in their belief, their understanding. We do that in a very relational way. It's not something where I get up the front and just talk to people, but rather we have some biblical content, and then there's opportunity to explore, discuss, question that together, and to do various activities that we have each time that are designed to engage with those ideas as well. And then becoming, which is all about the idea that as believers, and we heard this at the very start today, that we're meant to be moving forward and growing in our faith and in our ability to express that in different ways. And so we want everyone who comes, as we gather together, to be growing in our ability to live out our faith and to serve God in all manner of ways in our community. So that's what we're all about. We've been meeting, I think, most of this year, if not all of this year. I can't remember exactly when we started. First Sunday of every month. And, yeah, that's more or less what we do.
Thank you, Dave. That's a great example of creating a space for things to happen but not being absolutely sure what those things will look like until they emerge, until they begin to... we see how God brings things in and out of that space. Another area of building connections with the wider community, one of the things that is vital to the life and the health of a church is that, as one of the earlier Archbishops of Canterbury once says, the church is probably the only institution that's developed not for itself, but for the community. The church never exists for itself, but to connect up with those outside the church. And the Hope Singers is another initiative that we've just commenced in recent times, still very early seeds being sown, just beginning to germinate, and we're recognising that this is going to be a long-term project. It's been the history from elsewhere. So Paul's going to come and talk to us about the Hope Singers Choir. Ignore the message at the bottom. Discover we don't have any PowerPoint slides without that message on. Just saying.
Thanks, Paul.
So our little choir has been going now for nearly a term. We started the second week of this term, and we started literally very quietly with just one person who came along, one young lady. But I keep reminding her that she will be in, hopefully in months and years to come, she will be known as the Hope Singer Pioneer. So in the last couple of weeks, we've had one other young man join us. So we're up to now, we've had 100% growth, which has been excellent. So two young people who are coming every Wednesday. And we haven't quite turned it into a choir yet. I've said to them and to their parents that at the moment it is excellent value vocal lessons. Cheaper than you would probably even get through school unless the school offers it for free. And once we get kind of a critical number of students, we'll turn it into something more like a choir. But at the moment, I'm just singing with them every week for 45 minutes, and then we have a 15-minute snack, and then I send them home. So, and they're really, really enjoying that. It's interesting that the young lady who came to kind of be our pioneer goes to Marriottville High School, and she said that she's part of two of the lunchtime clubs that they hold there, and one of them is a singing club, and the other one is a Christian club, which has been initiated by students there. She said it's been initiated by a Year 12 who is finishing this year, but apparently a Year 9 or Year 10 is going to be taking over the kind of reins for that from next year. So we're glad to kind of have some seeds planted there, and this young lady has said that she's told some of her friends about the choir, and so we're confident that over time it'll grow. What we're aiming to do is just offer a safe place for kids that want to come along and sing, learn some singing skills. But it's not just for kids that love to sing, but it's a place that we hope will be able to offer hope and a safe place or a sanctuary. And we sing songs of encouragement, positive messages, some silly songs too, which are good fun. But we ask that you just keep praying for us. Our signage out the front has brought in those two students so far. And as we kind of widen our advertising, we just pray that God will touch the right hearts of the right families to bring them into a place where they can feel safe and enjoy and love singing with us.
Thank you, Paul. Some other areas where we can cultivate some space for things to emerge that aren't all predetermined or pre-scripted is what I've named as inviting conversations. Now, I had hoped to have one of those with one of our church members, Frank Grousso, this morning, and Frank was going to be part of it, but he has some friends from Sydney visiting for his new exhibition. Frank's been part of about 30 or 40 exhibitions over the years, and up in Ashton starting on the 18th of September, which is a couple of days ago, and going up until December. Frank has an exhibition up at the Cherry Bomb at Ashton. Fiona and I are hoping to go and to visit there as well. The lower picture there is of Frank's exhibition up in the Barossa last year, and a typical Frank cryptic headshot of Frank with his book around counting days. which was some of Frank's artwork, came in and through COVID and around it as well. Frank has artwork shown in the National Gallery of Australia as well as in the State Gallery as well. Frank's artwork invites questions very much. That's Frank's intention. He's very hesitant to speak about them. And if you do, the one question not to ask him is, you know, what does this mean? He says, well, what does it mean to you? Your imagination to enter into it. This is muzzled awareness, which sort of evokes all sorts of responses in me. Veiled ego, I must ask further behind what he makes of that particular title or heading. And the most recent one, which I really have to ask him, it's a Latin word, tristitia. I can say it in my head better than I can say it with my lips. this is one of it's just the last week with Frank as well. Frank does tell me sometimes that he sits in church listening to the sermons and others, and pictures emerge in his idea in his head, and he goes off and works on them. He has a couple of one work in particular. He's got two in mind to be gifting St. Matthew's before long. He says in the final stage he's not quite happy with them just yet. So I said, no, there's no rush, but we'd love to have them. And, of course, we have Frank's artworks, a couple of them there. They can be rotated. These are designed to be taken down and others to be put up as well. And I can tell you, they are terrific conversation starters. People react and respond in a whole range of different ways, and that's of the nature of art. One other area of inviting conversation and to engage with themes and thoughts and areas is a monthly book club that Mary is going to come forward and speak to us about. So again, meeting in the Perrin Centre, making use of our space there. Mary's just going to come and give us a little bit of a snapshot of what the book club does. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Tim. Yes. Well, about 6 years ago, we started a book discussion group for to reach out to one of our parishioners, Rosie, who was profoundly deaf, because she found it difficult to hear when she was with others. And so Viv Campbell and I started that, and immediately... Who doesn't like reading? Who does like reading? Yeah, look, everyone loves stories. And inspired really by our home group, where we listen deeply to the Word of God through Bible study, which gives such nourishment and companionship and hope, book discussion groups are centred on classics and modern and old, good quality literature. We get our books from the Burnside Library, multiple copies, and each month one person will introduce the author and then just get the conversation flowing. So just as in Bible study, we listen deeply to what the book is saying, we listen deeply to each other, and we have enormous fun every month, once a month, the fourth Thursday of the month in the Perrin Centre. We go to Writers' Week when that comes about, either into the city or at the Burnside Library if it's a hot day. And we were absolutely thrilled when Phosphorescence, Julia Baird, spoke yesterday to the Anglicans around Adelaide, message of hope and wonder and awe, and we get that visually through art and through our beautiful windows all around us. We are drinking in stories of life, but in particular I would recommend that if you were wanting to start a book discussion group, we would very happily share our experiences, because we look forward to them eagerly every month. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And you don't need to be a member of St. Matthew's to be part of the book club. Invite others. That's very much part of that feature. Now, at this stage in my preparation last week, I thought I could squeeze in one more, and I've actually disciplined myself a little bit because I want to hear we'll hear it in another context. But Joy, you mentioned how many people came to the History Month events. 160. So Matthews was very much involved in History Month for a range of activities, and 160 people came onto our site to the various events there. So that's another example of just being able to tell the stories, to open conversations, and to gather that space as well. And the final section I'm looking at under our the fruits, the leaves, the things that come up beyond our neighbourhood. And I'm going to ask, a few things first of all. One is, we haven't got a spot for this, but I did want to name it and mention it, that two of our church members, Robin Lakos, who's involved in another activity this morning, and Barbara Cooper, are stalwarts in running with the playgroup over at St Bart's Norwood, which is connected up with Theatre Bugs and that sort of space. So there's a logical connection with St Bart's over there. But that's a support beyond ourselves, and that is good. That is kingdom work, to be involved in those types of initiatives. So I just wanted to name that one there. And I also want to come back to Anne. So Anne's going to come forward beyond our neighbourhood, and this is one that was well and truly beyond our physical neighbourhood, but Anne's going to tell us about her online Bible study, which is literally global. Thanks, Anne.
Yes. Tim invited me to talk about online Bible study group that I'm involved with for a few years, but very often when I tell people that I'm doing online Bible study, and usually they would say it's better that you do it face-to-face. And I agree with them, because that's what I used to do, is to meet people face-to-face in a Bible study. But then, why do I love this online option now? Well, to answer this question, I have to rewind back to the time when we went to our mission trips. So before COVID, me and Stanley, we were involved in this medical and dental mission trips. We are a team of medical and dental professionals from all over the world. We gather and met at a designated country. We provided free dental and medical service to the people over there. And at the same time, we told them about God's kingdom, and we preached the gospel to them. So we were sort of following Christ's way of physical healing and call people to spiritual healing. But at the end of each trip, I would think to myself, it would be good if I can stay and Bible study with these new believers. Even though we had local partners, we partner with a local church over there, and it's their responsibility to continue to nurture and care for the new believers. So therefore, when BSF, Bible Study Fellowship, they wanted to start the online Bible study group, I immediately put my hand up. I said, I want to do it. Transfer me to this online Bible study. So I was put into this pioneer group with other group leaders, and we learned new ways of doing Bible study online, like how to connect people online. We explored what worked and what did not work. But God is very good, because God helps us to connect well with one another. I remember in the past when one member shared how she was not happy at work, she was very stressful and faced a lot of pressure, another member in the group heard her. And the next morning, this other member ordered a coffee, and it was delivered to her in her workplace. So we were using all this innovative way to love and care for one another. And I received a lot of love from my members as well. They send me a lot of things. They send me card and painting, backpack, anything, even things you cannot imagine. And I also sent flowers to my member as well. Because of technology, I get to Bible study with a Russian. So this Russian lady, she's not my group member, but she's a group leader. I pre-study with her, also with other group leaders, and then she's leading a group of Russian ladies in her own language. So as Tim mentioned before, what's St. Matthew's, today's St. Matthew's Day, what's St. Matthew got to do with all of this ministry outside of St. Matthew. I think St. Matthew plays a very crucial role that we come together on Sunday and then to have worship together and listen to God's word, and that replenish and renew us so that we will be able to go. Because that's what happened at the end of the service. We are commissioned to go in peace, to love and serve the Lord. So Sunday is a send-off day for us, being sent off from St. Matthew.
There are some amazing stories about how members of St. Matthew's have made a profound difference and are making a profound difference beyond our own neighbourhood, whether it's online and through that virtual connection with Anne. Another one that I want to just to finish with this morning is with Sandy Clark. If Sandy will come forward. I remember meeting Sandy when we first came in 1995 at St. Matthew's. So Sandy's had a long connection with St. Matthew's over the years and her own journeys and travels. And more recently, hearing about the Arthur Winner Memorial Foundation Hospital and the story behind it is a big story. This is just going to be a little snapshot, but an invitation to grab Sandy and to hear more about this particular project that grabbed your heart and your imagination and your calling in that space.
Hi, everyone. Some of you I've known for 35 years when I originally started here. Others I've made have made me feel very welcome since I came back. It's lovely to be back here, and wonderful to have Tim here as well. Yes. So, how did I start on this journey? It was certainly a totally God-led journey. Just a little bit of background. I'll speak as clearly as I can to try and get the story across. My husband grew up in Africa. And when we were first married, he took me there to meet his family, and we lived there for a few years. And I decided his mother was quite racist. She told me, don't mix with Africans and this, that and the other, but I wanted to go the opposite way, being a Christian, and I wanted to get to know the African people. So I worked for an all-African advertising agency, and from there I met Arthur Wiener. He was my boss, and his wife was a woman who back then used to volunteer. She was a volunteer for the Young Women's Christian Association. And I had some fabulous opportunities working for their company, and through that I became a journalist later in life because I had a TV series and wrote for the papers and so forth. Anyway, so I wrote a book which I thought would be useful for Africans, and just to talk about the sorts of things that I remembered back when I lived there in the 70s. And I caught up with Mrs. Wiener, who then had become vice president of the country, and God led me in the most amazing way when I went into her office. I hadn't seen her for years. That she was telling me that the country was so poor, certainly the Western Province where we built the hospital, it was one of the poorest parts of the world actually, and I just found myself crying and God speaking to me, and she said, is there anything you can do to help us? And God put on my mind to build a hospital there, a women's hospital, and I thought, where did that come from? I've never built anything in my life. And I'm 10,000 miles away living in Australia, but she took me to meet the chief in the village, and I promised the chief I'd build a hospital across the other side of the world. So it's been a total walk with God, because we actually achieved it through miracle on miracle, and we've had now 3,500-plus babies born at the hospital, never lost one mother, which is quite remarkable because it's just a total miracle of God. And we've just recently built the third stage. Now, the photograph here is when I went to Africa, Zambia. These are the staff at the hospital. The hospital was... we donated it back to Zambia and the government, it's been a wonderful collaboration. The government pay all these staff, and you can see me in the middle there. And we opened the second wing of the hospital when I was across there. It was only a little while ago, a couple of months ago. And this is the build of the third wing, which we're doing, which is the medical quarters for the staff, so that we can have visiting doctors and professionals and people stay at the hospital. And we raised all that money. We've raised probably in terms of goods and so forth, maybe about $1.5 million. And the Royal Adelaide Hospital helped enormously because I took everything to fit out the hospital from there, which was all donated. But the whole thing's been possible through hundreds and thousands of volunteers that I was able to rally together. And God just directed everything and just made everything possible. And the hospital's flourishing, so that's the story. Yeah.
As I say, there is so much more to read between the gaps of that, and you can grab Sandy after the service a bit more, and there's also the book available.
Yes, I've written a book on it
as well. So thank you, Sandy. We can see how these stories make a difference, and often under the radar, much more is happening. And I look around, and I know there's many other different projects and stories that are part of people's lives that we have before us. Cultivating space where kingdom things happen. I'm going to finish with a little story. It's based on the story Leif by Nigel, which I hadn't heard from J.R.R. Tolkien of Lord of the Rings fame. This is a version told by Tim Keller in his book that really captured my imagination. So this is Tim Keller writing in his book Every Good Endeavour, and his son Jonathan is an urban planner. There's a famous short story by J.R.R. Tolkien called Leif by Nigel. Nigel was a painter who spends his entire life trying to paint a mural of a tree. By the end of his life, he'd gotten one leaf completed. Then he dies. But when he gets to heaven, he sees the tree that was always there in his mind. That is the way of the Christian. Tim Keller's son, Jonathan, is an urban planner. In his mind, he has all these exciting ideas about what a great city would look like. Well, as a Christian, he realizes that in his entire life, he may only get one leaf done of his beautiful vision. We all face that reality. We live with the hope that there will be a tree, there will be a city, is going to be a just society. Beauty will be here. Poverty and war will be gone. We are not the saviors. Instead, hope can set us free from both the despair of nihilism and the naivety of utopianism. Let us keep working on our leaf. And when I was actually reflecting on that, you know what sustains those leaves? It's the ministry of hospitality. It's the one I was trying to work through how to mention. It's not just another sector. The ministry of hospitality of our church are the branches and the life-giving energy for all the leaves that flow and flourish.